We've done it again, Glyn, haven't we? We've done it again.
Why do you keep bringing me to these places?
I didn't bring you. You brought me. I told you I'd never been up this path before.
Yeah, but this was your idea to come here. It was my idea to come up the steepest hill in Wiltshire.
Yeah, it must be. But, this is definitely a new one on me, though. Not the place, which we're not going to reveal again. But this hill is certainly a new one. God, look at the orchids.
Yeah, there's loads of orchids up here.
A little bit pathetic, but... and look at the views.
Well, the sun's coming out as well.
Yeah. Sunshine's on the righteous. I might have to have a lie down in a minute, though. But,
yeah. Well, so will I. I'm officially old now.
Oh, yes. 50.
I know.
Good grief.
I'm going to sort out my saga membership later.
You've got a long way to go for your bus pass. Yeah. Anyway, we will reveal. The big reveal will come later on. So
yeah, we'll reveal all soon when we're at the top.
Keep listening.
Welcome to another Hidden Wiltshire podcast, where we talk about things in Wiltshire that are hidden. My name is Glyn Coy, and this week with me I have my usual podcasting partner.
Yeah, I would say this week is every blood. Well, every week is it? It's every month now. But yeah, Paul Timlett.
Well, every week for the last 18 months. So until I fire you,
yes,
or you resign.
Well, I'd have to have some sort of contract for you to fire me.
That's true.
And better still, some sort of pay. Yeah.
Don't go on about pay rises, please.
I'm going to keep going on about it until you pay me.
Oh, dear. So, yeah, we are...
Episode 37.
Is it episode 37?
Yeah.
I've really lost count.
That's what it says here.
But we've been doing this now for over 18 months, so it's they all blend into each other again.
Yeah.
It's pretty soon we're going to start repeating ourselves because we've forgotten what we've
I think we
recorded.
Started that in episode 2, didn't we?
Anyway, we're outside again at the moment, and it's really windy at the top of this particular hill that we're at.
Yeah, I'm kind of hoping that these mics aren't going to pick up the wind.
Yeah, we're hoping that the wind will kind of fade into the background because it is pretty blowy up here. And this week we're at the top of another rather marvellous hill.
We're not going to say yet.
No, but we are. Actually, I was thinking we have a live audience here this week for the first time. A herd of cows that's looking at us, quizzically sat on this bench.
Yeah, so those young bullocks are licking their lips.
So we may get interrupted, either by cows or by walkers, because we're on a sort of main footpath here as well.
Yeah.
So when are we going to reveal our location, Paul?
Oh, in a bit.
Okay.
Let's talk about what we've been up to the last... We used to call it the last 2 weeks in Wiltshire, but now it's the last four, isn't it?
I can't remember that far back.
No, that's the problem, isn't
it? I can't remember what I did yesterday, never mind last week.
Especially now you're so ancient.
Oh, I know, don't talk about that.
You would have found this week that your memory evaporated instantly overnight, the moment you turned 50.
Yeah, so I turned 50 on Wednesday, which was... just in the run-up before was an unimaginable age to me, but now I'm here, I'm kind of resigned to it.
Traumatic.
Yeah. But I always think that at least I'm not as old as Paul.
Well, that's right. As I said to you, I always thought being in my 50s was brilliant and the best years of my life. And then I reached 60 and I thought, this is even better, but it just, everything hurts though. It just tends to take the edge off it a bit.
Yeah. So I've been, few weeks, I've done quite a bit of stuff in Wiltshire, which we can talk about. I've also been dipping into Somerset a bit.
Yeah.
So I've been crossing the border, and it's been noticed, because I've had a few people say, that's not Wiltshire.
Aren't you that man from Wiltshire? What are you doing here in Somerset?
Yeah. So
that was my Somerset accent, by the way.
Yeah, it's very good. Very authentic. Yeah, I went to Stony Littleton Longbarrow the other night.
Is that in Wiltshire?
It's not.
Ah.
It's just over the border.
In Somerset.
In Somerset, so it doesn't count. So I can't talk about it, really.
No. But it does look amazing. I haven't been yet. I keep meaning to go there. But you said you have to crawl in to get all the way to the bottom.
Yeah, it's very low. Mm. It's not like West Kennet, which is head height and higher. Mm-hmm. This one, it's a crouch. You have to crouch to get in.
Right.
And then the further down you go into it, the lower the ceiling gets. It does go quite far back, maybe 12, 15 metres.
At some point, you're like a cork in a bottle, are you? You're just completely wedged.
I felt like that. I was on my hands and knees, and I thought, I'm going to have to get out now. So I couldn't even turn around. I had to go out backwards.
Brings me back to my caving day.
Yeah.
In fact, sometimes you had no alternative but keep going because it was impossible to go back.
Yeah. But I did that. But we've been doing quite a bit of stuff in Wiltshire. We've been doing the Hidden Wiltshire Walks with the museum.
We've done two of those since the last podcast, I think.
Yeah, we have.
Actually, by the time this comes out Sunday, it'll be three, won't it?
Yeah, we've got the Castle Queen one on Sunday. Yeah, but we did the Follywood walk, didn't we? That was very good in the evening.
Yeah, that was a good turnout. 15?
Yeah.
12, 15 people?
Yeah, quite a few people. It was a lovely evening.
Mm. It's a nice bunch of people as well.
Very
interested in the tales and...
Yeah, the Tales of the Headless Horseman. Yeah. Very disappointingly didn't put an appearance in.
No, and the Tales of Mark Wellerhan.
Yes.
Who I met there, and several other people have met who listen to the podcast.
Yeah.
And he didn't put in an appearance either.
No, that's right.
It's a bit unfortunate.
So we did, before that, we did the Hip and Scoon walk.
Sorry, before you move on to that, what I found really interesting on that walk was when we got to the moat, the Gatekeeper's Lodge, the Moated Lodge, just outside... what's it called?
Potton,
thank you. Potton Wick. And we were stood on a public footpath looking at the trees where the moat is kind of hidden within the trees, and it was so overgrown. A couple of people did go in to have a look to see if they could see anything, but it was so overgrown. But one of our chums, Hedley Thorne, put his drone up over the farmland there, because one of the guests said that she was pretty certain that there was an old right of way from basically the A360 to the moated lodge, and of course the moated lodge, as we've said before, was the gatekeeper's lodge for the deer park, that belonged to the Bishops of Salisbury, who had a manor in that area. And the lady who was with us, who rides across there, said, I'm pretty certain there is an old right of way which has been lost that goes direct from the A360 to the Gatekeeper's Lodge. So Hedley put his drone up and we could see it.
Yeah.
We could see the line. We couldn't see it from ground level, but from above you could see the line of this, and it was plumb straight and it led direct to that lodge. So that's a right of way that's been lost. Because, of course, I mean, it's something that we rant about a lot, isn't it, about blocked up rights of way, and I'll touch upon that again in a bit. But that was really interesting. That's a fascinating part of that walk. But you said we did Hip and Scoop as well?
Yeah, we did, following in the footsteps of Revilius.
Yeah.
That was another nice day.
Yeah.
That walk was a bit of a challenge. It was quite long, wasn't it? So we had to make some compromises
on
the route.
It was about... It should have been about 8.5 miles, but a couple of people had to get back fairly early, so we missed out bits. So if you go onto the website and look at the Hip and Scoon walk on there, we didn't do the whole thing. We missed out Tidcombe. And we didn't do much of the Coombe itself. We just sort of walked in and back out again.
Yeah. We had, actually on that walk, we had a hidden Wiltshire follower. He was over from the United States.
Yeah, that was brilliant.
Rob, who joined us on that walk, so it was fantastic to have an overseas visitor join us.
Yeah. And David Dawson was with us from the museum, from Wiltshire Museum. And it was interesting when we got to the Devil's Waterscope, the stone, this sort of debate about is it natural, is it man-made? And again, if you look at the website and the blog on the website, you'll see a photograph of it. And David's view now, I think, is that it actually is natural.
Yeah.
It seems very unlikely when you look at it. It's such a bizarre, the patterns in the stone.
They do look carved, don't they?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
In fact, I saw a photograph on, what's that Facebook site? Something like Ancient Stone Botherers or Bothering or something like that. and there was a photograph of a stone which I think was in Brittany, and it had very, very similar markings on it.
Right.
And I think David was saying that he knows somebody who had tried to make that same association, or was wondering if there was the same association, and perhaps there was that connection with France, yep, and Brittany. But I think David knows somebody whose opinion he greatly respects, who's pretty certain it's natural, which is incredible, really. Where else have we been? You're doing Castle Coombe, aren't you, on Sunday? I can't make that one.
Yeah.
So we don't really know what you're going to go and do yet.
Well, I've got a route. Have a route, but we'll play it by ear. So, yeah, we'll be walking. I mean, Castle Coombe is slightly different, that part of Wiltshire. It's more like the Cotswolds, isn't it,
It is the Cotswolds area, outstanding, or whatever it is, yeah.
So it's a slightly different style of Wiltshire, but yeah, we'll enjoy that.
Yeah, the landscape's very different out there.
Yeah. So where have you been?
Yeah, I was just looking at my notes because I can't remember either. I was thinking about the walks that appeared on the. Oh look, is that a kestrel there? Just above us.
Oh yeah.
It's either that or a sparrowhawk just risen up the top of that coombe. There's a couple of new walks on the blog site, on the website, and the wonderful Elaine Perkins has done a few walks, and she writes really well. I love her her blogs and her photographs, all taken on her phone, but she takes terrific photographs. So she did yet another one that I wasn't aware of. So the walk is called Enchanted Clearbury and the Villages of Oddstock and Nunton. But Clearbury is another hill fort, I think. So again, some great photographs of that. That's well worth a look and a read. And she those that follow the Facebook group, the closed group for subscribers, for contributors, for people who actually write articles. There's a bullet looking over her shoulder. I think she did another one recently as well on there. Stu and I did a walk on where are we? Last Friday, a week today. First one we've done for, blimey, a couple of months, I think, partly because I was away for 6 weeks. And we've both been busy working up at Parsonage Down and stuff, so we thought it was time to do a walk, and we went over to right on the border with Dorset. In fact, at one point we could almost have put a foot in Dorset, but we didn't. So we went to Wynn Green, which is one of my favourite parts of Wiltshire. Love it over there. The views are just astonishing, even better than the views we're looking at now. So we went to Wynn Green, and then we walked along the Ox Drove, having tried to drive a stretch of it because we went wrong. We then sort of walked along it and looked down over Fern House, which is the Rothermere family's country seat now. And then we dropped down, and this is where, and again, you'll read the blog, and we'll probably do a podcast about it at some point, so we won't do too much now, but Stu and I had a bit of a rant to ourselves, because we'd strung together a route that would take us through two, if not three open access areas. There's a lot of open access areas down there. If you look at the 1 to 25,000 OS map, there are open access areas everywhere. And as we've always said on this podcast, the challenge with open access areas is actually getting into them.
Yeah.
So you can see these lovely open areas, and there are some here where we're sitting now. But how on earth do you get in without trespassing, basically? So one of the open access areas we wanted to get into was to take us to Winklebury Camp, which is an Iron Age hill fort looks down over the Ebble Valley, and we found a sort of convoluted route to get us in there using rights of way, using a bridle way and a footpath. So all was good. But from there, we wanted to get down to Tollard Royal because I wanted to look at King John's house and because I hadn't seen it before and all that stuff. But the routes that I plotted took us through this sort of beautiful looking bottom, Rotherley Bottom. So we got to the open access area, which was the other side of a fence, and we peered in and thought, well, how on earth do we get in there other than going over the fence? And then we spied a gate. So we walked down to the gate and it was a private sign, saying no public access. And we were blooming certain that there was access. So we climbed the gate and thought, right, we're going to exercise our rights.
Yep.
And we walked down the coombe and it was absolutely beautiful. Got to the other end and there was like a 10-foot gate to get out, but fortunately there was a little pedestrian gate, and again no public access sign on the other side of the gate. Anyway, into Tollard Royal, back up through Guy Rich's estate, which fortunately there was lots of rights of way through there. He's been very good about sort of access to that, and that's a lovely part of the world. And Guy Ritchie and what was Madonna's house is really sort of hidden away, but visible from the public rights of way. But after we'd finished the walk, I wrote a very polite email, which is unusual for me, to Rushmore Estate, who own the land around Tollard Royal. They own King John's estate.
Yeah.
King John's house, they own Llama Tree and all of that, and the golf club, and they own this Rotherley Bottom. So I wrote to them and said, look, can I just clarify whether that open access is still current, or whether there's some exemption? And I wrote it on Saturday morning, the day after. Monday morning, first thing, I got an email back from the estate office saying, you're absolutely right, those signs should not be there, and we will take them down.
Brilliant.
Isn't that fantastic?
That's how it should be.
Yep. And blooming hats off to Rushmore Estate, I would say. So I wrote them another very polite email back saying, thanking them for that and saying how that's really refreshing and heartening and what a sort of shining example they were.
So, yes.
And they again sort of thanked me for that, thanked me for my kind words, and said, you know, we like to encourage public access wherever possible to our estate.
Yeah.
So brilliant. That's how it should be. I'd like to access more of their estate, obviously, but I'll never be satisfied.
You're never quite sure when you write these emails whether you're going to go
no.
get the response saying, stay off my land.
Yeah, off my land. Yeah, you've got no rights to be in there.
Because I've read.
Yeah.
Or had interactions with people that I know have been on public access land and been told to get off it.
Yeah, yeah.
And had to stand their ground.
Yeah. I've mentioned it in a previous podcast, one that Stu and I went on to, and I won't say where it is, but it's another big Wiltshire estate, and I know that you know, they have been written to about access and basically just ignored every communication, and they continue to make access very, very difficult. So it's a really quite bizarre situation we have in this country, that you have all these open access areas that you just can't get to.
Yep.
And I don't know how legally how that works and how we stand there. Whether you're allowed to take the most direct route in, albeit you're crossing private land to reach it, I don't know. If anybody knows, I wish they'd tell us.
Yep. That's maybe a research project for us to do.
Yeah.
To start advising people.
As we were talking, as we came up here, we were chatting about Country File and Nick Hayes, who was on there the last Sunday, who's written one of my favourite books, The Book of Trespass, and now a follow-up, The Trespasser's Handbook. And I know he's quite vociferous about this. And in fact, we didn't talk about this, but it's reminds me of something that we did. He put a post on Instagram the other day about how he got 10 people together, 10 friends, to go and help a farmer pull ragwort for their field. And he posted a load of photographs on his Instagram feed. And so the farmer welcomed them in. They helped the farmer out. The farmer gave them access to part of the countryside that they hadn't seen before. And Nick Hayes was just sort of effusive about this and said, this is how it should work. You know, mutual respect, responsibility yeah. on the part of the public, respecting farmers' land, public helping out the farmer granting access, this is how it could work.
Yeah.
And of course, I'm sitting there thinking, well, we did that a year ago because we helped out
Frankie
Guy at East Hill Farm. Yeah, we did exactly the same thing. So I'd like to think he nicked the idea from us.
Yeah, he probably did.
But it didn't credit us.
Yeah, yeah.
But it is a great way of doing it. And I, you know, as we said at the time, Frankie was very grateful for what we did. And we got to see part of Salisbury Plain and the Imber Range that we wouldn't otherwise have got access to.
Absolutely,
because
yeah.
Because its access is barred. It's not open access at all. It's permanently closed because it's a military training area.
But, yeah.
A number of farmers farm there. And by doing that and helping a farmer out, we got something back, apart from the cream tea afterwards.
Yeah.
Was actually seeing part of the plane that we just couldn't get to otherwise. So it's that, I don't know, mutual respect and helping each other out. That's how it should work.
Absolutely.
Anyway.
A little bit of respect and polite communication goes a long way.
Yeah, absolutely. What else? What else have we got? Do we want to talk about, that or...?
Now let's hold off on that.
We'll hold off, all right, okay.
Until it comes of something. We'll keep that to ourselves.
All right.
Until I see some evidence.
Yes, we've got something quite exciting coming up, but it's not come to fruition yet.
Yeah.
And it will be the kiss of death if we do mention it. Yeah. Is that something on fire over there? I can see smoke.
Ah, yes, yes. There is, that's at the back end of Longcombe Bottom.
Oh, no, you've given it.
Yeah. Oh, God. Oh, well, we have to tell them where we are.
Oh, yeah. And now is the time anyway. So.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So we're at the top of Pickett Hill.
Yeah.
Just looking down. Actually, as we were talking, those walkers we saw over to our left.
Yeah.
I spotted them. They'd gone right down to the bottom, down to the Bloodstone.
Yeah.
Down at the bottom of Longcombe Bottom. But yeah, at the end of Longcombe Bottom, which is not open access, that's private.
Yeah.
And
you're pointing again. That's no use to anybody apart from me.
Well, it's... Shut up. Yeah. We have an audience. I've told you, we've got cows.
We're buggered off now.
They got bored. They got bored. Yes, the end of Longcombe Bottom, there is a sort of clearing, and the farmer there basically just occasionally shoves a load of stuff in there and burns it.
So where the smoke is, what is that? That's which bottom is that?
Longcombe.
I thought this was Longcombe.
No, this is Longcombe.
Oh, Longcombe. Yeah, Longcombe and Longcombe.
This is Longcombe.
Right.
That's Longcombe.
Okay.
It's a beautiful bottom, actually. Yeah. If you stand at either end, you can take a photograph of it, and it's just it's a stunning little valley.
Yeah.
I call it the on Instagram. Whenever I put pictures up, it's the Secret Valley.
Secret Valley.
And
yeah.
People try and guess where it is.
Yeah. Well, of course, just above it, right next to it, is the perimeter road around the Imber Range perimeter road. Because I've quite often stopped there and looked down there, and I hadn't realised it was the same bottom that you admire.
And of course, that field just to the left and above the Longcombe Bottom is the poppy field, which is on the cover of our book.
Is it?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
About 2 or 3 years ago, that was just a sea of red.
Oh, I thought that was further over here, where we are.
No, it was that field over there. So the photo on the front of the book, I was on the perimeter road, looking across the field to here.
Oh, fantastic.
So, yeah.
So another...
You didn't know that.
No.
You didn't know the front cover of your book. That your name's on the front.
I was only interested in the back cover, because that's the photograph I took. But no, I knew it was here somewhere. I just assumed it was behind this bench that we're sitting on.
No.
Because we are sitting on... Well, it's your favourite bench, isn't it? One of your favourite benches.
One of them,
Looking down into Longcombe Bottom and the Bloodstone. And
Bratton.
Bratton over there and Bratton Church and the coombe that goes up to Bratton Camp, and I'm pointing now. At,
you see Bratton Camp, the hill fort. You can see the just make out the long barrow on the top.
Yeah.
Wonderful view. And you can see all the way in the distance over to Somerset, you can see the television mast.
Oh, that's Wells. That's the Wells
that's
transmitter.
That's the Wells transmitter, yeah.
Oh, blimmin' heck.
Where I was yesterday, actually.
Yeah. And I was frequently in the early 1980s in my student days, because things grew up there that we used to go and pick.
Yeah. So, lovely view.
Yeah. God, you can see it really clearly.
Yeah.
Actually, it does show you what a small country we live in.
Yeah.
I mean, that's almost Bristol.
Yeah, that's a long way. Yeah. Right, anyway, we better get on to the main topic or we're going to run out of time.
Well, do you think? Well, it depends how long you talk for. Because I'm not going to say anything now.
Oh yeah.
For the next.
This is my topic this week.
Because so, I haven't been to this place.
Yeah. So yeah, we'll have the transition music now, and then afterwards we'll come back and talk about Bink Knoll Castle.
Yes.
Now I'm going to get complaints.
Careful how you say that. Careful how you spell it as well.
Right, so yes, so this week's topic is, well, if you try and say this phonetically.
This is a Jeremy Hunt moment, isn't it?
Yeah. If you try and say this phonetically, it's Bink Knoll Castle, but apparently you're supposed to pronounce it Binnell.
Oh, Binnell, right.
Binnell. Although I've seen some spelling that said Binnell. So we're going to upset everyone in the sort of Swindon, Rorton area that are locals to this area, but I believe it's Binnell Castle. Which is an Iron Age hill fort on the outskirts of Rorton.
I suppose the fact that neither of us are Wiltshire, proper Wiltshire, then we've got no idea.
No, this is where we're really showing our true immigrant status.
Yeah, yeah.
We're not locals, you see, so we struggle with things like this. But Binnell Castle is, they think it's an Iron Age hill fort, but I don't think it's ever been excavated, so no one knows for sure. I think they found some Roman pottery up there. And I'll talk a little bit more about it shortly when I explain how I got there, because it's been used and reused over the years. It was a Norman Moton Bailey castle. It's been extensively quarried, so it's all been churned up. So there's not much to see in terms of usual Iron Age features and things like that. But it's definitely got that hill fort shape. And at the top of a hill, it's got that kind of prime location that you'd expect to see.
So you've written a blog about this, which is on the website,
yes.
And lots of photographs, because I was looking this morning, that aerial shot that you took, because I hadn't really appreciated its sort of position there. In fact, looking across at Bratton, it's kind of similar in that it's like just on the slopes, just over the top of the hill, isn't it?
Yeah.
It seems to be. In fact, very much like Winkelbury, where I was talking about earlier on, where we were on Friday, again just over the top of the hill, so dominating the landscape from one aspect, but perhaps not from the other side of the hill.
Yeah, yeah, and it's a bit of a compressed shape. It's like a triangular shape.
Yeah.
But very distinctive. Especially, I mean, you need a drone shot to take it all in, really. Which is, if you look on the website, you'll see there is one there.
Yeah, yeah.
But. It's an interesting position because as you look on as the drone is in front of the hill fort and looks beyond it, you can see there's a flat plateau which eventually hits that area of land that rises up to the ridgeway. So you can see all the way across to Hackpen Hill around there and Barbary Castle, and you can see all that in the distance. So these connected landscapes, it all comes back into play again in terms of understanding why things are where they are in the landscape.
Yeah, and actually Hedley Thorne, who we mentioned earlier on, I don't know if he put it on the Hidden Wiltshire website, but Facebook page, he certainly had it on his own, where he walked up there the other day and he was talking about this concept of, or asking the question, whether they would have been linked. Of course, that assumes that they were used and occupied at the same time. Which,
yeah, but it's interesting.
Which isn't a given. So.
Yeah, it's interesting because I a couple of weeks ago, I went out to Oxfordshire to meet up with Headley by the Uffington White Horse.
Yeah.
And there's an Iron Age hill fort there, and you've got the Ridgeway as well. And actually, from that vantage point up there, you can see all the way across to Wiltshire. You can see across to the Ridgeway where Barbary Castle is. So, you know, we separate these places into counties for our own purposes, but the reality is that it was one vast connected landscape of people building hill forts, trading, regularly travelling along the same routes.
And that's, so in the Iron Age, when... In fact, I'm not sure that Uffington is Iron Age, is it? It's earlier.
It's even older, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, probably not a hill fort at all, but...
Well, there is a hill fort above it.
There is a hill fort above it.
So, obviously, later in the Iron Age, they built the...
Yeah. But the tribe, which I can never remember, but you know, begins with D.
Durotriges.
So, is that all part of the Durotrie kingdom, these settlements, these hill forts?
Of different tribes, because I think the Durotriges were slightly lower down. They were the south end of Wiltshire.
Yeah.
So where you were the other day, down towards Tollard Royal and Shaftesbury, they were down that way, more down into Dorset, actually.
Yeah, right.
And there was another tribe further north whose name escapes me, but I'm fairly sure they would have traded, because we know that, certainly when we did the walk at Titherington last year, David Dawson mentioned that there was a field there where they'd found, a metal detector had found a Durotriges coin in the field.
That's right,
And that's a good 10 miles north of their patch.
So obviously
they were coming over.
Trading.
Interesting. Mm. Anyway, this particular walk, I started it in Rorton.
That's near Swindon, isn't it?
It is. Now, don't say anything rude about Swindon, because I've had complaints about you and Swindon.
Really?
No, but I thought I'd...
But you're trying to provoke one, aren't you? You're trying to get somebody to write us.
So first of all, we know Swindon has its own separate authority. So it's part of the ceremonial county of Wiltshire, but not the modern-day administrative county of Wiltshire. It's got its own borough.
So is that an excuse not to go there?
No. I think we follow the ceremonial county.
Okay.
So... I'll be sending you up to Swindon on some missions just to annoy you.
For God's sake.
But as you drive up towards Swindon from Avebury on that road, as you drop down the hill towards Rorton, just before you get there, there's a sign that says church. So I chucked a left there down this really narrow track, and you get to the main Church of England church in Rorton, which is elevated, really. It sits on the top of a hill. And it's... I think it's called St John the Baptist and St Helen Parish Church. It's a Grade 1 listed building. It's one of these sort of classic Norman-style churches. Fantastic building. Quite a commanding presence. And
do you know why it's... Because I sort of... It made me sit up and take notes when you said it was Grade 1 when I was reading your blog. And what makes it... Why is that Grade 1? Whereas, for example, the church at Tollard Royal, where we were the other day, is only... Grade 2 star or something.
Don't know. It's a good question.
Just wonder what there's obviously something
there's something there that, unique there, isn't it, that pushes it up to a higher status.
I think grade 1, I mean, you can't touch it.
Yeah,
you can't do anything, you know.
Yeah.
Whereas grade 2, in fact, I used to live in a grade 2 star thatched cottage, and we could do a lot of things, but there were certain, like we had stone mullions and we couldn't touch those.
Yeah.
You know, why would you? But otherwise, you know, inside we could pretty much do what we like. And gold flock wallpaper and all the rest of
it, as
you would expect.
Yeah, totally destroyed the interior.
Yeah.
But so this church is, and it's, if you walk around the grounds, it's got an interesting expanse of cemetery. And as you sort of got to the far end of the cemetery, which went down the hill, and there was a farmer's field. And then sort of, I don't know, 15, 20 metres away from the cemetery in the farmer's field was a solitary gravestone. And if I had a bit more time, I would have gone and have a look to see what it was. But anyway.
Oh, I thought you were going to tell me who it
no,
was.
No, that's, I'm going to hold that back for another visit. I'll tell you what, that church in Rorton, it's down this tiny country road, single track road.
Yeah.
I thought, blimey, this is a bit hairy. got there, and this church has the biggest church car park I think I've ever seen. It was huge. So there's no parking issues, but having said that, it does
say...
There's
a B&Q behind it, was
there? The sign did say parking for church visitors only, so if you are going to park there, make sure you nip into the church and stick some money in the wall.
Was it a particularly big church then?
It was quite a big church,
Okay. So, I mean, that's always interesting, isn't it? Why, you know, in fact, we were looking at one as we were walking up here, looking over at Steeple Ashton. Steeple Ashton is a reasonable sized village now, but, you know, why they built such huge churches in quite small settlements, or in that instance, some way from the settlement of Rawdon.
So why it's there and why it's been built so big, I don't know, but it's a fascinating place and really interesting church to start the walk and have a look around. But the route follows down the side of the church, and eventually you start hitting the edge of the escarpment that leads all the way to Binnell Castle. And it was a really lovely walk, actually. I did it in March. It was very muddy, actually, at that time of year. But the walk was great.
So now it should be
brilliant. It should be a really nice walk. But it was... one thing that was quite interesting, I started following the rights of way and followed this track across the field and eventually hit the track that joins the bottom of the escarpment. And there was a gate. A normal gate, you know, a latch gate that you open and walk through, that had no fence either side of it. So it was like a portal into God knows where.
That did make me titter, your photographs.
The thing is, I found one there, and of course, being me, I had to open the gate and walk through it.
Yeah, I would as well.
Then we walked another 200 yards down the track, and there was another one. So this walk is particularly unique for having gates.
But for people of a certain age, and even you may not be old enough to remember this, is the Tommy Cooper sketch where he goes on stage and he just brings on with him a gate, a little picket gate, and he spends about 20 minutes just going in and out of this gate. And people,
but that was me on that day.
just go back and forth. And I well up now even thinking about that sketch. It's one of the funniest bits of comedy. And he doesn't say anything. He just goes in and out this gate and just looks at the audience and it goes back through again. It's brilliant.
Oh my God. So I'm here with my pieces of paper trying to keep my crib notes going.
Which have just disappeared.
They're just disappearing all over the place. I've just already missed a page here. So if you hear rustling papers, it's me. And we're doing this at home in our offices. And
you're getting a right mess there, aren't you?
And you can't hear any rustling.
This is like a Boris Johnson speech, isn't it? You're going to go on a Peppa Pig.
Forgive me. Forgive me. Oh God, I'm making a right mess of this. Right, am I on the right page now? Yeah, here we go. Yeah, I wrote about this. I wrote, here I found a curiously placed gate, conspicuous by the absence of a fence on either side. While it would make sense to ignore the gate and simply press on with the walk, of course I had to open the pointless gates, walk through and then close them. Repeat ad infinitum.
All that was missing was a bell.
Well, I just thought, doorbell. It's almost taken the trouble to put the gate there.
You've got to use it.
Through.
Yeah, absolutely.
So anyway, you follow the escarpments and you hit the edge of Salthrop Wood, and that was one of these interesting woods that's got loads of signs saying "Keep out, do not enter."
Oh, my favourite sort of
private. And even signs suggesting you might get shot if you go in there, because of course I think they do shoots in those woods. So
it's like Woodborough, isn't it? Woodborough Hill.
Yeah. Yeah, but what you're aiming for is to get to a wood called Quidhampton Wood.
What the farmer's aiming for was you.
I know.
Don't use wood.
There's a lot of horsey people use those routes as well, so we encountered some horse riders along the route. But that wood itself, Quidhampton Wood, was absolutely delightful. It was on a steep hill, so it's very contoured, and the paths take you know, up quite far and quite deep into it. And this time of year in the summer, it's absolutely gorgeous. We found a bench on the top of the hill with great view across towards Wootton Bassett that way to sit and have our lunch. But when you're walking along the escarpment there, one thing you do see is glimpses of Swindon.
No.
You know that tall building in the centre of Swindon?
Oh, I'm sorry.
You keep seeing it as a landmark, so... You can't quite escape. You kind of, that's the thing about Swindon is, it doesn't. Once you're outside, it just becomes open countryside.
When Stu and I did the eliminate my memory. Liddington Castle.
Yeah.
When we went up there, and you know, again, you're this beautiful countryside, and you know, you got the M4 sort of in front of you, and yeah, then Swindon the other side. But it's quite a I take the mickey out of Swindon, I know, but to be honest, I haven't been there for about 30 years, so it might be lovely now.
It's not.
No, okay.
Oops, I'm going to get complaints.
Yeah, right. I'm going to write a letter and complain to you. Here we are, I'm trying to make amends, and you've completely blown it. I've lost my train of thought now. But yeah, that sort of stark contrast between, you know, it's like here. I mean, you know, we're sitting here looking at Westbury down there, which is not the most attractive of places, although I've got a lot of good friends in Westbury, and spent many happy memories of nights out in Westbury. But you've got that contrast between, you know, kind of modern town and,
yes,
and then, you know, this beautiful sort of ancient prehistoric countryside just on the doorstep.
Yeah, yeah. That's right. I mean, I drove past Liddington Castle the other week, and it's really close to the M4.
Yeah.
And actually, this particular walk I'm describing now is close to the M4 as well. I mean, the wind was blowing in the right direction, so you couldn't actually hear it, but you could see it. And it does snake through, you know, some quite ancient landscapes. But yeah, Quidhampton. And actually, just going back to this reminds me of where we discovered, or where I discovered this route from. It was a hidden Wiltshire follower who bought the book. Richard Phillips is his name. I think he lives down in Cornwall now. But he'd suggested this particular route. Mm-hmm. So, and he talked about the fact that, you know, in the spring, the sides of the escarpment at Quidhampton Wood are carpeted in with bluebells and wild garlic and things like that. And as I was descending the wood down this very steep bank, I could see all the wild garlic starting to come up. I just thought, oh, this would be really nice in the spring. Very wild. And
so does it get, do you find bluebells up there?
You do, yeah, yeah. Yeah. So it's a bit of a haven, actually, because it's one of those places you can't drive to it. You've got to walk to it.
Yeah.
And there's no easy spot to get to walk to it. You've got to go out of your way. But as you sort of walk through the wood, you come out of the wood, and then you're faced with the bank of Binnell, which is this glorious site of a steep embankment with terracettes around it. It's very picturesque. Very dramatic, and the path then takes you.
So this is below the hill fort.
Below the hill fort.
So the earthworks, or just part of the hill?
It's just part of the hill.
Right.
So you just see it's like a lot of hills that you see in Wiltshire. It looks like a sort of coombe shape.
Mm.
So you come out of the wood and you see this steep-sided hill.
Yeah.
That goes up to a flat embankment at the top. And then the contours of the path take you around the front, and you go up the front of the hill fort on a tree-sided path that takes you up to the summit. And on from the edge of the hill fort, you can look around and see quite steeply down into the valley. It's really quite dramatic and picturesque to view. And that's the point where I got the drone up, because you can see all sorts of weird earthworks on the top, and you're never quite sure whether they're ancient earthworks or remains of quarries or whatever. But the drone pictures really do justice to the view.
They are pretty stunning. I can imagine when you're there, you don't really get any sense of what that landscape truly looks like.
Yeah. But the other thing that goes through that area is the White Horse Trail. So after I'd been to the hill fort, we descended down the hill again. And at that point, you can circle back round. You descend down into the fields and walk back to Ralton through the fields at the bottom, although they were quite boggy in March. They'd be fine now, no problem. But we decided to actually go on, because I looked on the map and saw we weren't too, or certainly within walking distance of Broadtown White Horse. And Broadtown White Horse is one I'd never been to before.
I'd forgotten it existed till you did that walk.
Yeah, it's one of the lesser known hill forts, White Horses.
White Horse.
And there were signs for the White Horse Trail, so I thought, well, let's carry on. I was with my son, Rowan, and we thought, we'll push on and go and see this White Horse. So we carried on, and it was a pretty awful walk, actually, at that time of year, because at the bottom of the escarpment where the path goes through the fields, it's basically a bog.
Oh.
So you've got springs and bog bubbling up, so it was a tricky navigation to get through to the bottom of the White Horse. And of course, we eventually got there, and the path takes you to the bottom of the White Horse, and you have this picture board there, or information board that talks about the White Horse Trail.
Yeah.
Shows the route where you can walk and see all the seven or eight? Can't remember how many White Horses are on in Wiltshire. It's terrible.
Somebody put me right on this on the Facebook. It's not nine, is it?
Is it nine?
I think I said eight and somebody said told me it was nine.
God.
I've got the number wrong again, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, I do know that I think it was Headley you put on some social media page something about... Oh, no, it wasn't. It was Simon Hettensall, the journalist who lives in Wiltshire. He was doing a tour of the wild White Horses in Wiltshire, and he said, oh, I'm doing this tour of all the White Horses in Wiltshire in one day today. What's your favourite? And about 60% of the comments below were kept saying, Uffington!
Yes.
Which isn't in Wiltshire.
Honorary Wiltshire.
Yeah. Which actually is in Oxfordshire, although the locals are a bit annoyed about that because it used to be in Berkshire. And Berkshire
were very
upset that they lost it. Anyway.
Yeah.
We won't get into other counties' politics.
Well, we could just poke it with a stick and stir them up and then run away.
However many there are, seven or eight or nine White Horses in Wiltshire, there was this information board that told you the route. And apparently it is quite a nice walk, because someone messaged me after I'd posted up about the White Horse that they, you know, done that route that takes you, the walk from Broadtown to Cheryl White Horse is really nice.
But...
At the bottom of the hill where the horse is, I'm looking at this information board, and I look up, and I said to Rowan, where's the bloody horse?
What White Horse?
I couldn't see it. The slope was overgrown with grass that was probably, I don't know, 2 foot high.
Yeah.
You couldn't see it. So there was only one thing for it. I had to get the drone out. So I sent the drone up, and... it got this fantastic view of the White Horse that was obviously very well kept by the villagers in Broadtown. And beyond it, you could see in the distance that escarpment in the distance where the Ridgeway travels up from Avebury through Hackpen over towards Swindon and then beyond past Liddington over towards Oxfordshire and Berkshire.
Yeah.
It was an interesting one. And I was looking into the history of the White Horse. I've written some stuff here, so just bear with me while I get my papers out again. Make sure they don't get blown away. But I think it was put together, or it was put in place by a local farmer. I have got his name here.
Giles?
William Simmons.
Farmer Giles.
Farmer Giles. And actually, I noticed with the shape of that particular White Horse, it looked almost like a child's drawing.
Yeah, it is quite simple, isn't it?
It's but quite charming in its own way.
Yeah. And it's quite a small one as well, isn't it?
It is small,
compared to some of the others.
And I don't think it's one you can see easily. I know somebody else, when I put the photo up of it on Twitter, someone said, oh, that was obviously taken years ago because I can't see it at the moment. I said, I only took it yesterday. And apparently it's because it was a drone photo looking down, it was fine. But for some of the people saying living nearby, if you look up the hill towards it, it was obscured by the grass. So it needed a bit of a trim, I think.
Well, that's not dissimilar to Uffington. And it's not the grass that obscures it. It's just the angle.
Yeah.
Because it's cut. I mean, really, it was cut, which is bizarre. It was meant to be seen from above.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, bear in mind how old it is. There's no way that anyone could see it.
A message to the gods?
A message to the gods, or
aliens?
Spacemen, or,
yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you were saying it was the grass that was obscuring the chalk?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. No problem to see it from above.
Yeah, so it's not that it's just got grey, or like the one that we can't quite see over there at Bratton, which is around the corner, because that's cement, isn't it? And that all goes like a horrible grey colour.
Yeah, they concreted that in the 1950s. And it's funny, I've lived in this area for, I don't know, 16 years, and I've seen that White Horse at Westbury re-whitened or repainted several times. And every time they've done it, English Heritage has said, oh, we're using some special kind of paint now, which... it's self-cleaning, so we won't have to do it as much.
Yeah.
And then 18 months later, it's gone grey.
It's grey again, yeah.
So it's currently a grey horse.
Actually, a bit of a diversion, but I saw that they're doing the they're repairing the kiwi at Bulford as well, you know, another white, you know, chalk figure. So that's all gone sort of grey. But right now, they're you know, the locals, I guess, because the army get involved in that one, they're re-whitening that, whatever they do to it. Probably use Colgate or something, toothpaste. Yeah. Other toothpastes are available.
These things, they do have to be re-chalked on a regular basis, every few years. I know we should speak to our friend David Carson about it, because
he'll know.
He'll know, because he's got a white horse on his farm.
In his garden. He's got one in his garden.
David's got the Alton Barnes white horse. I think the village take responsibility for it now, but I think last time they re-chalked that one, they old David, his military connections, they got some Chinooks too.
No, it wasn't. He told us the story. It was a young girl at Woodborough School.
Oh, okay.
Her dad was, I think, in the RAF. And because, of course, the Chinooks are RAF and not Army.
Yeah.
And she spoke to him, and they got the RAF to deliver the bags of chalk to deposit at the top of the hill.
Yeah, fantastic.
Unless I completely made that up, but I think that's what he said.
We might have to do a correction next time around.
Yeah.
We'll have to check with David what the...
Our corrections column will be as long as the Guardians is where we're going.
I think what with the... Well, anyway, get back to Broadtown. It was cut in 1864, I believe, by a local farmer called William Simmons. And it was neglected for many years. And I think it was in 1991, the locals set up the Broadtown White Horse Restoration Society, and they are responsible for regularly scouring it and maintaining keeping it looking spick and span. But apparently you can see it from quite far away at certain points. But going up close like I did at the bottom, you might be slightly disappointed because you can't really see very much. And it's one of those ones that's slightly harder to get to.
So best seen from afar then.
Yeah,
Like Swindon, really.
Oh dear. But anyway, what I did after I'd done that, I thought, right, I'll circle back round. So I dropped down the hill to the fields below and followed the rights of way all the way back to Rorton. And it was a bit of a trudge, actually, because it was very muddy underfoot that time of year. It'd be fine now, no problem. But I was miserable by the end of that. It's about an eight.
That'll make a change.
It's a 9 mile round trip, but definitely worth doing. I'd certainly recommend the route. You can devise a circular route that takes you from Rorton Church to Binhol and back again. Which should be a nice 5 miler.
Yeah.
If you want to extend it out to the Broadtown White Horse, that's adding another 3 or 4 miles on.
Yeah.
Worth doing it.
And that's circa an out and back, wasn't it?
Yeah. You can go out along the escarpment and come back along the fields below. So it's a...
Oh, okay.
You can...
Oh, you didn't have to come back the same way.
Okay. I think there's a certain point when you come back that the path does diverge and you come back.
Yeah.
But a lot of it is like a circle.
Right.
But yeah, it was a fascinating trip for me. I mean, I don't often go to that part of Wiltshire. It's, you know, much neglected by us, I think.
Yeah,
That
definitely.
Sort of Swindon area.
Yeah.
Because you've got this anti-Swindon bias thing going on.
We haven't.
It was really worth visiting, and I'd definitely go back. I think I'm probably going to go back in August time to walk it and see it in a different type of light with less mud on the ground.
Actually, think about it now, it's probably not a great time to go, because if when you're close up, the grass is obscuring it now, because everything is growing like absolutely
I know, it's
mad,
crazy, isn't it? I know when we did that walk around Folly Wood the other night, there was that section when you're going from the farm towards the moat.
Yeah.
That section is a bridleway, and normally it's quite wide, very accessible. In the winter it's full of mud, it's like a quagmire.
Yeah.
And we walked it, and it was like 6 foot of grass.
It's like going through the jungle, wasn't it? It was
it
incredible.
Was.
I'd never seen it like that.
And I'd only been there 2 months before, and it was, wasn't anything like that. So everything's growing like crazy at the moment.
Well, having spent a lot of time at Parsonage Down over the last few weeks, it's like it up there. I don't know. You sort of look back and try and remember how it was a year ago, because we're there all the time. So trying to remember what it was like in June, July last year. But the grass seems to be incredibly long. We did Stu and I did a botanical survey up there on Thursday. Wednesday. a couple of days ago, and we just couldn't believe how long the grass was. And it's had an effect, we think, on the poppies as well. Yeah. Poppies, what am I talking about? The orchids.
Yeah.
And as we noticed coming up here just now, that first bit when we were puffing and blowing up the hill, and the grass is sort of quite long there, but the quite a lot of orchids around, but they're really quite pathetic, weren't they?
Very feeble looking.
The flowers are very small and withered, and somebody said to me that, you know, they don't like competing with long grass, and because it means they have to use all their energy reaching up for the light.
Yeah.
I've also read that they do very well in long grass, so I don't know. Don't know what's going on, but it's a funny old year, as they say.
Yeah. Anyway, I think we can wrap up now.
Yeah. So, how are we doing? Oh, blimey.
Yeah, time to wrap up.
Yeah.
So, should we do our usual thanks and credits?
Yeah. So, the bit of music going into that bit in the middle there, we've used this a couple of times before, but I like using it because just the title, I mean, Steve Dixon's music, of course it is, but it's called From the Edge of Grey to Green, and I always sort of think of White Horses about that. You know, when I think about that title, and I think of White Horses, because some, you know, particularly the one over there, Bratton, you know, goes quite, you know, they're never quite bright white, or I suppose they are when they first chalk them, but I always think of them as being sort of slightly grey, and as they get overgrown, they become green. So,
yeah,
that's my train of thought.
Yeah, that makes sense.
There's a journey there somewhere. Actually, I was talking to Steve recently, and he said he's going to write some more music for us. I mean, we've got quite a lot, a big selection. And some of them we have only used once. There's quite a few we've used twice, but he's all enthused, and he's going to write some more. But I haven't seen any yet, so maybe he's less enthused now. But thank you, Steve. And what else? The website for show notes, and of course all the blogs that we've talked about, and the different walks, the online shop. Any of that new stuff in there yet?
No.
What are you looking at?
No. Because
you're brandishing a rather fine hoodie.
A hoodie, I've got a mug, I've got all sorts of...
Yeah, where's my mug?
Oh, yeah.
That's my wages for last month.
Yeah.
My mug. So, yeah, new stuff coming. And, of course, there are books. Or a book. There's only one left now, isn't there?
Yes.
Well, one. The second book is available. The first one
first
is
sold out
again.
Again. we've got a few of the second book left, there's a discount on that at the moment, actually, so it's a bargain.
We should remove that and they'll stop. Because when we didn't have the discount, they sold like hotcakes. Put the discount on, nobody wants them.
I know.
What's going on?
Someone might say there might be a recession coming.
Yes.
or inflation might be rampant.
Cost of living crisis. Didn't see much of evidence of that at Tollard Royal and around there.
Doesn't affect everybody.
No, it doesn't. It affects people in different ways.
We're going to get in trouble again.
We are, yeah. In fact, I, as you know, I had a night away last weekend, we went cross-country back to my homelands of Sussex, and my God, there's certainly no sign of recession over there.
Yeah.
Blooming heck. Right, next episode, according to my reckoning, is Sunday the 7th of August. I think that's the first Sunday in... first Sunday in August.
Oh, okay. Because
this one's the first Sunday in July, isn't it?
Yeah, and that gives... Oh, yeah, we've got some logistical challenges coming up then, because I'm on holiday that week.
Oh, yeah, all right, okay. Well, we can record it anytime.
We've got a month to sort it out.
Yeah. Got a month to do some more walks as well.
Yeah.
I need to revisit my list of places we need to go. So, again, you know, if people have got anywhere that they think we should go and see and discover any little hidden gems. In fact, there is one, and I'm kind of looking over there now, a place that I want to go to, which very much is hidden and quite difficult to get into. And I'm not going to say what it is. I'll tell you afterwards, Glyn, when we've stopped, pressed stop. But it's over there. Anyway, I think that's about it, isn't it?
That's about it. So I guess we can say goodbye for now. And I guess we could head down to the Three Daggers, couldn't we? It's only over there.
Yes, that's a good idea. Yeah.
Coffee and cake.
Could, yeah.
Or it's gone 12 o'clock, so beer.
Yeah, even a beer.
All right, we'll see you in a month's time. Bye for now.
Bye.